Now, here come our movie reviews. Mark Kermode along next week. This week, we bring you Andrew Collins, the film editor of the Radio Times.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
So, Easy Virtue, Pride and Glory, Warlord, stuff we're going to do before 4 o'clock. So we have a box office top 10. Now you're film editor for the Radio Times, which of course means that you have to know about movies, but not the current top 10.
No, I actually go to see films at the cinema, as I believe I've said before.
Do you pay money?
I certainly do.
Good heavens.
Yes, I'm supporting the film industry, unlike most film critics who leech off it.
So you've seen 4 of these. The gap's filled in by listeners. So at 10, it's Hunger.
Hunger, I've seen this. And do you know, my views on this film have now hardened into thinking it is the best film of 2008.
Because
it is a film about the IRA hunger strikes at the Mays Prison in 1981. We're looking at death, brutality, sectarianism, dirty protests, and people sweeping up wee in corridors. And yet it is artistic. It's an artistic film. I think it's an amazing achievement by Steve McQueen, the Turner Prize-winning artist.
At 9, Mamma Mia, the review from Jake in London. Like the musical spoof at the end of Crackerjack, with the charm amputated and replaced with a carry-on humour graft. All the pleasure of seeing someone else's children doing a nursery school nativity.
Brilliant. See, that's why I've not gone to see it. I've chosen not to.
How about that? 8 is Eagle Eye, the review from Alex Wilson. The car crashes were Bay-esque. This is back to Dr. Mark's Bayification discussion and rant, which he's done recently.
Oh, yes.
Car crashes were Bay-esque in the fact that it really didn't matter which car crashed into which. And by the end of the film, I was thinking, iRobot. Golmaal Returns is at number 7, so thanks for all the reviews. We got loads in the end.
It's a remake of an Indian comedy from 1973, I know that. So Bollywood has obviously run out of ideas in the same way that Hollywood has.
Chris in Nottingham, I have seen Golmaal Returns in a cinema in India. The locals absolutely loved it. The whole cinema was shrieking and whooping as the characters fell over themselves, spoke in funny voices and tripped over fences. This is like Crackerjack again. I'm afraid that it didn't quite have the level of subtlety, i.e. any, which I took for in a comedy. I watched it as I'm still trying to learn Hindi. If you're trying to master the language, there's very little reason to see it. Also, the music is bad.
There you go, then. Still in the top 10.
Cameron in Blackburn, a good all-round typical comedy film, 7 out of 10. Says Cameron. Patricia in Twickenham, totally unnecessary sequel, heavy-handed slapstick, a few funny bits, but nothing special, and a waste of some decent Bollywood actors. At 6, it's Igor, this review from Simon James, I bore in so many ways. 5 is Burn After Reading, which you've seen.
Oh, I really like this. This is the Coen Brothers movie, which has the unfortunate task of coming a year after No Country for Old Men, which the entire world fell over themselves to love, for good reason. I think Burn After Reading got an unfair crack of the whip from the critics. I'm glad it's still in the charts. It's a very silly spy spoof with Brad Pitt, George Clooney in it, all playing idiots, and I liked it.
Beautiful people playing ugly, stupid people.
Yeah.
Ghost Town is at number 4. This is the Ricky Gervais film.
Yeah, I went to see this at the cinema with some people, and the two children were sitting next to me and talking all the way through it, but I still managed to enjoy it. Ricky Gervais manages to transplant his sardonic humour into an American rom-com without too much schmaltz.
Now, number 3, it's Saw 5. This from Stuart in Newcastle. Gore, bore, repeat. Open way for Saw 6. See you next year, beg your pardon, at tech speak. And at number 2, it's High School Musical 3.
Which I would be silly to go and see, wouldn't I?
I don't think so. It made Mark cry.
I know, Mark absolutely loves it.
Loved it. Yeah. Mark from Bristol, cheese, sing, more cheese, more singing, even more cheese, and even more singing. Simon in London saw High School Musical 3, franchise, which I can only describe as a saccharine and insidious feature-length advert for Disney. It was a bit like an extended NSYNC music video, but with absurdly long lead-ins to poorly written ballads.
Now, it's huge. And if it wasn't for that Bond movie, it would still be number one.
And there it is at number one. It is The Quantum of Solace. So we know what The Good Doctor thinks. We've got loads and loads of emails about it. What do you think?
Well, I was disappointed, as I think a lot of people have been. There's some good action sequences in it. And obviously, Daniel Craig is good. I don't think anyone's got any complaints about him. But it's a ridiculous idea to start a Bond film 1 hour after the last Bond film. A, you might not have seen Casino Royale, and you might not understand the story. And B, move on. We start again. We get a new villain, a new gadget, a new country, and some new ladies to have sex with, and start again. Don't go back to the past. And he's all moody in it because his girlfriend got killed at the end of the last one, which I'm sorry to give away the ending of the last one, but the new one assumes you saw it. And she kind of drowned at the end, and she double-crossed him, and he's upset about that, so much so that he only has sex with one other person. for the whole film.
That's how upset he was.
Yeah, he's really upset. So this is James Bond being upset.
That's grief as we've never seen it before.
Within days, he's having sex with the girl who played Tess of the D'Urbervilles on television.
And that doesn't end happily.
No, but she has a very small part in it. I was disappointed she didn't do more. That's Gemma Arterton.
Adam in Stoke went to see Quantum of Solace last week. I found it to be a dumb, generic action movie with a lack of emotional involvement. I felt completely detached from the character of Bond, and the film suffered from a weak narrative. Men want to be him, women want to be with him, but ultimately, does anyone really want to watch 007 anymore? Well, the answer is yes. That's why
it's
number one.
It's broken every record, I think. I think it's made more money in one day than any other film at the UK box office when it opened.
This is Matt ZB. I thoroughly enjoyed Quantum of Solace, despite the ludicrous, i.e. Bondian plot. Like a fine Swiss cheese, it was the holes that made it special. Back with Simon here. Surely the worst thing about it was the opening. At the start, I turned to my friend, said words to the effect of, I love the Bond opening sequences, this is going to be great. Only for a half-decent chase scene to entirely peter out into nothing. Then the theme began in bizarrely incongruent fashion. All they had to do was to wait a few minutes longer until Bond had chased down the double-crossing bodyguard and presented the perfect killer gunshot image to segue into the title sequence in classic Bond fashion. I was thoroughly underwhelmed.
That's the word I would use, underwhelmed. I think the theme tune is okay. People don't seem to like the theme tune.
Oh, it's rubbish.
I like it.
Sing it. Hum it. Give me any phrase from it.
No.
Well, there you go. Bond film, it's supposed to be instantly there, singable and memorable.
Doesn't matter. I enjoyed it when it was on.
And then you forgot about it.
Yeah, I did.
Nick Young, Master of Arts, he says, oh, the answer to his question, when is Slumdog Millionaire coming out in the British cinemas? As I remember from last week, it's in January, Nick. You'll have to wait till then. He says, speaking as a Bond fan, I'm actually pleased that the franchise has moved on from the excess of gags and gadgets that blighted the Brosnan years, particularly Die Another Day, which to date is the only Bond movie where 007 was so much of a self-parody, I've actually wanted the villain to win. The Bond movies gave the spy movie genre a much-needed shake-up, and in the face of this, James Bond needed to adapt or die. Daniel Craig's slimmed-down version, not overly humorous, but with the odd drier side, and a Bond who is seen to bleed is without doubt the best Bond since Connery, quite possibly the best Bond ever. I mean, it's possible to have that conclusion
and still
think that the film is a bit all over the place.
Yeah, and I know Mark has mentioned the product placement. I'm not so bothered about product placement as the choice of products. Coke Zero, which is glimpsed, is now the Bond fizzy drink of choice. Heineken beer, which I don't see him drinking Heineken beer in there. He drinks cocktails and things. But apparently Heineken beer is the beer that Bond drinks, and there's adverts for it. And it says, you know, experience the Bond lifestyle by drinking this beer. I don't really get all that.
Derek says, dear Simon and pseudo Mark, just wanted to say a word about Hunger in case no one else does. Brilliant, and frankly, it stands as one of the most horrifying films I've ever seen, up there with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and yet it's not a horror film, just an incredibly visceral drama.
It is.
So it's awesome. I came out of the cinema and wished to eat many muffins.
That's very interesting. Well, the actor.
Can you gauge a film by how many muffins you consume?
Yeah, I suppose so. At least you're consuming them afterwards rather than during.
Lee in West London, dear Lennon Pavlichenko, saw Question of Sport this week. This is Quantum of Solace. I'm now blind and cannot hear, hoping for much more, or should that be less? Next time, I think Daniel Craig is definitely up there as one of the best Bonds. In the debate over Bond and Bourne, I think Bourne now has the edge as I manage to understand the plot. This will continue, lots more to get through. However, it would be crime against cinema if we didn't review the stuff that's new.
So
we'll come back to all the James Bond and Question of Sport issues at a few moments' time. Tell us something that's new, Professor Collins.
Well, the thing is, and I hate to say this before we even got to them, that it's a reasonably underwhelming week.
Why do you think Mark's not here?
You see, I don't believe. You see, he's away. If he's going to be away, he did the Quantum of the Solace a week early anyway, didn't he?
Yeah,
what's that all about?
That's because all the papers were
doing it. Yeah, I know,
but
I was really upset by that. I went to the screening. I was really excited. It was the first showing. I saw the back of your head there. It was the first showing ever of the film. It was an amazing thing to attend. Yeah. I was so excited. I got there an hour early. And then afterwards, I thought, well, I can't even write about this on my blog because obviously there'll be a world embargo. And the next morning, all the newspapers reviewed it 2 weeks before it came out. And then marked it a week early. By the time it came out, yeah, I felt like I'd seen it already.
Well, people are still talking about it. It's still the number one movie.
I know it is, and it will be. It will be for
another couple of weeks. We'll continue to this. We'll come back to this before.
Here are some films that aren't going to knock it off the number one spot.
Yes,
basically, this week. The most likely, which still isn't going to, is W, as I call it, George W. Bush, who is the almost forgotten president this week. Particularly, he's still there for another 70 days. You know, he's still got some of his epoch to live out. But this film is basically memorialising him as if it's all over. It's very odd. Oliver Stone, having made Nixon, which was a tremendous kind of reappraisal of a past president who many people had kind of boxed off as a kind of cartoon failure and crook. And he looked at the inside of what was going on in his mind and was a beautiful performance by Anthony Hopkins. Now, you're kind of expecting something as good as that, but unfortunately, the raw material isn't as good as Nixon. Because George W. Bush, there's one story to tell, which is that he was a loser until he was 40, and he basically became the president of the United States in his 50s. And
which kind of makes him a winner, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes him a winner, but the film, half of it is done like The West Wing, set just before the Iraq invasion. And you've got some fantastic supporting characters. Josh Brolin is brilliant as George Bush. All these positive things I'm about to tell you. Richard Dreyfuss is brilliant as Dick Cheney. Even Tandy Newton is good as Condoleezza Rice. It's a fabulous cast. It's unbelievably good. James Cromwell is George H.W. Bush. So there's some fabulous acting going on, brilliant casting. It's well made, this film. It starts out in 2003. It goes back to when Bush was at Yale, follows him through. There's even the pretzel incident is in there. Unfortunately, the moment when he's reading from a children's book when September the 11th occurs isn't in there. I don't know why that's glossed over, but it is. Nevertheless, you get lots of episodes from his life, and it's well put together, and it's pointless, I think. It's an almost pointless film. There's almost no point in making it. Well, you know, they did it very quickly. Why did they bother? I mean, why did Oliver Stone want to make a film about it? I don't know. I've read interviews with him, but I've not yet cracked it. Why did he do it?
What's intriguing?
I mean, why would you do it?
We were supposed to be talking on the programme last week, and then he got busy or something. And the thing that I wanted to ask him the most was, at the end of the film, and it finishes with him completely messing up a press conference, you know, he's asked what his legacy will be. And he can't think. I mean, it's like the worst possible example of the kind of Bush of caricature. And yet, few weeks after that, he wins the election. That wins that election. You know, he goes out there and he beats John Kerry quite easily.
Yeah. And fairly and squarely, as far as we know.
And, you know, you kind of think, I can't put those two facts together.
No. And also, because he's not left office yet, it's brilliant that they got the film out, you know, before the election or in election week. That's an amazing feat of filmmaking and logistics. But at the same time, the Iraq war is ongoing. So, you know, before the Iraq war, we see them all sitting around discussing it and coming up with the phrase axis of evil and all that stuff. But then, of course, the war's not ended, nor is Bush's presidency ended. So there's no ending to it. And I suspect the actual ending will probably be very humdrum as well
in
real life.
Jamie and Lester, brackets PhD pending 2010. Dear Les Ross and Hardeep Singh Kohli, I am...
So you must be Les Ross?
I'll happily be Les Ross if you want to be Hardeep.
I'm happy to be Hardeep.
Check the internet for details. I am chomping at the bit to see Hunger. It looks like British film has finally taken a European perspective at storytelling in which real-life events are presented with cinematic artistry rather than dull social realism, which some people believe is the only way to tell the truth. Was there a clip from W, by the way? I realise I've just already moved on.
I don't believe there is. I believe there are clips from the next two films.
Oh, OK. All right. James says, does Andrew have anything else to say about the film? Oh, apparently, there is a clip.
Oh, brilliant.
From
I didn't even know.
So here's a clip, Ben.
A bonus.
Here's a bonus clip from W.
Things weren't panning out the way we thought they existed. And your national security advisors should have gotten into this, gotten the details, and vetted them for you.
Mr. President, I think we're being overly negative in a situation where, indeed, we lack the metrics to judge the overall success of the global war on terror.
My office sent to you spy satellite photos that showed that WMDs could be hidden in caves that you never responded to.
We analyzed those photos, Mr. Vice President, and they are actually trenches, watering holes for cattle, not caves.
That's not what my people told me.
Vice, you grew up in Wyoming. You should damn well know cattle. I mean, there you go. You fool me once, shame on you. Now fool me twice, and you can't get fooled again.
Well, I think there is a reason for going to see the film, because Josh Brolin's impression is good.
It's
and the script
good,
in places is funny like that.
Well, in real life it was funny. So, I mean, you know, they throw in quite a lot of his choice phrases, misunderestimating and all that. That's all in there. But I finished watching it and thought, well, why was that film made?
And when he calls Guantanamo Guantanamera.
Yes,
which,
he does. Yeah.
Which got one of the biggest laughs.
If he'd played it as a comedy, it would have been one thing. But it can't be a comedy because the things that he did had impact around the world. So it can't be played as a comedy. It has to be a tragedy, doesn't it? But it's not really played as that.
Andy and Milton Keynes about Question of Solace, Nothing New, Die Hard 4, Much More Fun, Quantum, Awesome, Theme Tune, Pants. He's saying that.
I'm just sticking up for it. I don't know why. But
and
before
we move on, let me tell you, Gavin Henson has been ruled out of Wales's clash against world champion South Africa in Cardiff. Tomorrow he has an Achilles injury. Gavin Henson out of the match against South Africa. What else is new, Andrew?
Well, let's do Easy Virtue. This is an adaptation of a Noel Coward play that was written in 1924 and was actually made as a silent movie by Alfred Hitchcock in 1928, although Hitchcock was not very fond of it. So basically we're looking at a period drama, although they're presenting it. I think really no point in doing this, but the director, Stephen Elliott, who did Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and actually had a skiing accident, and so was out of action for quite a few years. So he's been away from filmmaking for a long time, but he's back now. He says, we didn't want to make a period film. We wanted to make a modern film for modern audiences. So we tried to give it a really contemporary voice. What is the point, I ask, rhetorically, of making a Noel Coward play set in the 1920s in a country house, as this is, and giving it a modern feel? I don't know. I know we've got a clip, though, so why don't we get it in early this time?
Mother, this is my wife, Marita.
Mrs. Whittaker, the pleasure is all mine.
Oh, you're American.
And very welcome, Jim Whittaker.
Larry, this is my father.
I fought alongside many of your countrymen, Larita. And I must say it's an honour to have a comrade in the family.
Thank you. I do hope I'm not a disappointment.
Far from it.
And my two little blisters, Hilda and Marion.
Aren't you the woman who won the Grand Prix?
Ah, yes, first place before disqualification. Apparently you need chest hair to change gears in Monaco.
I saw you in the paper. I cut your head out. I could just die.
Oh, Ferber, that suitcase to the drawing room, and do be careful.
Marion, girl, you're not a bit like what we imagined.
Oh, someone older, I expect. Awfully sorry about that.
So, in the play, the character there, played by Jessica Biel, who's the American, who's been married in a hurry with the scion of this family, and he brings her home, and obviously it's a disgrace that he's married her, this racing driver, this flighty woman. She's much older in the play, I understand, but obviously they made her slightly more attractive and glamorous in this. And she arrives and causes mayhem because she's slightly vulgar. And at one point, and you've seen this in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away, she sits on the chihuahua that we've just heard barking there in that clip. And this is, I suppose, a bit black comedy. And apart from that, it's a kind of comedy of manners, and it's got this interesting political sort of base, which is about being after World War One, and Colin Firth, who plays the patriarch of the family, who's kind of slightly distant and a bit grumpy and uninvolved, is because he was, you know, he was in World War One and basically didn't want to come home. And Kristen Scott Thomas, who is the Harridan mother, went and basically plucked him and brought him back. So he's miserable. And basically, this American woman brings a bit of fun to the family. And it should be a really interesting bit of social comedy, but it's really underpowered. The whole thing is totally underpowered. The acting is either over the top or just under the top. In fact, Jessica Biel has just, she's just not got what it takes to carry a film, which she's supposed to do in this. Every scene she's in, she's supposed to light up the room, and she kind of doesn't. And the young man in it, who is called Ben Barnes, that's it. He was Prince Caspian and was in Stardust, and he's coming of age role. He's not really interesting either, in it. It's just one of those films.
What happens to the chihuahua?
Well, she sits on it,
yeah,
and she kills it. And this is not giving anything away. You see it being buried in the trailer for the film, so I'm not giving anything away that you don't already know.
So the dog snuffs it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's supposed to be a bit of a faux pas, social faux pas. Never mind that it's a dog and it's died. So I just expected better of this. It's Noel Coward after all, but some stuff from the olden days doesn't need to be updated. There's a terrible decision by the producers and the director. They have some songs on the soundtrack done in a 1920s style, but they're modern songs. So you get Car Wash. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Sex Bomb, but done in a 1920s style. Now, if you think that's hilarious, then you might like the film. But if you find that absolutely nauseating, then you won't.
David Shrewsbury, stop talking about Bond. Expensive, bland, pointless rubbish. Craig, not even close to Connery. He's without charm or humour. And the only 5 foot seven tough guy in history.
You see, that's somebody Move saying on. Don't talk about Bond, but talking about Bond.
Are there any shorter tough guys than that?
What, tiny, tough guys?
Yeah, Jimmy Cagney was maybe smaller than
that. He probably was quite small, yeah.
And in Kent, although I'm looking forward to the Christmas Aardman animation A Matter of Loaf and Death, I wish it was called A Quantum of Wallace.
You see. You
now,
got,
that's good,
there's
huh?
cleverer people out there than there are in the film industry.
What else is new?
Pride and Glory. We do have a clip of this as well. It couldn't be more different from Easy Virtue, which is all very English. This is all very American. It's a story of cops who, in New York, there is corruption abroad. It's basically about corruption and family ties. So John Voight is the patriarch. His sons, one of them is Ed Norton, who is one of the quietest Hollywood actors I know, and I like that about him. Unfortunately, he's paired up with the brother-in-law, played by Colin Farrell, who's one of the noisiest Hollywood actors that I know, when they allow him to be noisy, as he is through most of this film. So let's hear a clip of it, and you'll get the atmosphere.
Good you came. You were there for Lonnie, at least, huh?
Yeah.
I sat down with Bill Avery and Armstrong. We're gearing up task force.
Everyone's going to want in on that. You're going to get all the oranges.
How about you throw your hat in the ring? Make a phone call.
Me? No. No, definitely not.
Don't you think it's about time you got back on the street? After 2 years on the tip, feel sorry for yourself?
I don't feel sorry for myself, Pop. I'm just not up for that.
How about Lonnie? You feel sorry for him? His wife, his kids? You guys came up together.
Oh, come on. Don't lay that on me, okay?
If it was you, he'd be all over this.
Yeah.
Be the first one signing up.
I know that. Not a goddamn thing I can do for long now, Pop.
Do you remember the film Narc that came out about 5 years ago?
No.
A kind of modern-day cop thriller set in Detroit, but really filmed as if it was in the 70s, and it was The French Connection. It had Ray Liotta in it and Jason Patrick. Anyway, the director of that, Joe Carnahan, has co-written this with the director, who's called Gavin O'Connor, and he and his brother, their dad was a New York cop. So you can see why they made this film. And at the beginning of it, you're really excited, because it looks a bit like a 70s film, even though it's set now. It's grainy, it's grey, everybody's mumbling, Edward Norton is superb. But almost in the second scene, I think, Colin Farrell overacts his backside off. He finds out something tragic, goes into a bathroom, punches the mirror, then pulls the mirror off the wall of the bathroom, then kicks the hell out of the rest of the bathroom. And it's one of those completely unnecessarily over-the-top pieces of acting where I imagine Edward Norton would have kept it all in and been just as powerful. So this signals something, which actually is a portent of what happens in the second hour of the film, where the entire thing goes nuts and unravels. And what was once subtle and interesting about families and people just becomes about shouting. And I just couldn't believe how bad it got after the halfway mark. In fact, it's almost worth going to see the first half and walking out. If only you could get enough. Half your money back.
They're going to start shouting now, I'm off, we're going to watch something else. Give us 30 seconds on Warlords.
Well, Warlords is one of these epic Chinese war movies, basically. It's basically the equivalent of a Western. And it stars Jet Li and Andy Lau, who've been in pretty much all the important Chinese films of the last few years. They're massive. It's set in 1870. There are a sea of corpses. There's slow motion swordplay. There's a lot of. It's a very male film. Usually you get a feisty female in these modern wushu films, but you don't in this one. It's all blokes, male bonding, blood brothers, and 500 stunt horses. A lot of horses falling down. I don't like that. I know they do it humanely, but I don't like seeing the horses falling down, Mark. I don't like it.
And in your
Mark,
opinion,
I called you Mark. That's fine. It's because your hair.
I don't care. Really.
Your hair's gone up today.
What is the movie of the week, Andrew?
Movie of the week is W, as I call it, because it's got some fabulous performances in it, but right. It's pointless.
Right, so the movie of the week is pointless.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Hey, go and see Quantum of Solace. I hear that's very good.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5. Live.